What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at WeightWatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
This book is dedicated to everyone who has navigated their health with courage, even when they were misunderstood or unheard. This book is dedicated to you. I cannot tell you how many times I have been told that people have felt written off by their doctors because they could not explain what has happened to them. This does not necessarily mean your doctors don't care about you. In medical school, there is very little training on how to diagnose and manage allergic diseases. Sometimes, it can be difficult to find the underlying cause of an ailment. Our understanding of how our immune system abnormally responds to foreign substances is constantly evolving. This book can also help healthcare professionals have a better understanding of allergic diseases. Millions of people suffer from various allergic diseases. You are not alone. I hope the information contained in this book will help empower you to learn more about yourself and embark on a journey toward better health. Happy spring, everybody. Welcome to the Morbidly Curious Book Club's companion podcast. My name is Patricia, or most people call me Patches, and I am the owner and host of the Morbidly Curious Book Club, a non-fiction-only book club diving into the darker macabre parts of your library. Thank you so much for tuning in. All right, guys, it's getting a bit warmer outside. Grab your tissues, grab your Zyrtec, and let's dive into allergies. Because I got the chance to talk to someone who is incredibly special, and they wrote an incredibly special book. From viral social media sensation Dr. Zachary Rubin comes an in-depth look at both common and surprising allergies, spotlighting patient stories, the history and science behind allergies, common myths, treatment options, and more. Whether you realize it or not, millions of people suffer from various allergic diseases. They're some of the most common but wildly misunderstood afflictions today, and Dr. Rubin has made it his mission to pull back the curtain and help everyday people understand their allergies and find ways to feel better. In his new book, All About Allergies, Everything You Need to Know About Food Allergies, Asthma, Hay Fever, and More, Dr. Rubin explores and explains dozens of allergies and diseases and provides actionable treatment options and information. This is the ultimate source for anyone who's ever felt in the dark about their health. If you guys don't know who Dr. Rubin is, please stop listening right now. Go follow him on social media platforms like TikTok, Instagram, wherever. Go check out some of his videos. But a little bit more about him. So Dr. Zachary Rubin is a double board certified pediatrician and allergist immunologist who practices at Oak Brook Allergists in the Chicago area. A nationally recognized medical educator and public health advocate, he shares evidence-based, accessible information on allergies, asthma, and public health with over 3 million followers under the handle @Rubin_allergy. Dr. Rubin earned his medical degree from Case Western Reserve University. He completed his pediatrics residency at the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Chicago and his allergy immunology fellowship at Washington University in St. Louis. Outside of medicine, he enjoys swimming, hiking, hula hooping, and spending time with his wife, daughter, and three German shepherds. All About Allergies is his first book, offering a clear, compassionate guide to managing allergic diseases. I hope you guys enjoy the episode and learn a thing or two about allergies. But I'm so excited to talk about this because, oh my God, I learned so much. But first
you
of all,
you got to read it already?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yay!
Of course, I flew through it. Awesome. Congrats on being a New York Times bestselling author.
I can't believe it.
Oh,
I
so
mean,
cool.
Number six on the advice how to nonfiction setting section. I got to tell you, I'm so emotional about it because I will tell you when I went through this process, there were some publishing houses that were just like, why would we ever publish an allergy book?
They've really?
Never. Yeah, and even recently, I was talking to a doctor in the UK, and he's like, everybody says don't write a book about allergies because no one's going to be interested in it. And I said, that can't be true because
it's not true.
Millions of people deal with these things. And maybe because people were scared to talk about it and didn't want to put the effort into it. I don't know. But the response that I've gotten over this book has been overwhelmingly positive. And I even had a friend who's a neuroscientist text me and say, you know, I'm pretty sure you're going to make the list. And I wasn't sure about it. And literally 15 minutes later, I get a call from my editor, publisher, publicist, agents. And they're all like, holy crap. You did it. Number six. You know.
Hell yeah.
And I've been shaking. It's been over 24 hours. I'm still shaking from the announcement. I'm just buzzing with excitement because we're finally changing the way that we talk about these issues that are so common, poorly understood. Many people feel misunderstood or not taken seriously. And so this type of book is meant to help people feel heard and help people understand how to navigate these difficult situations. So I hope this will be a book that will be a go-to for years to come and for a way to for people to change the way we talk about allergic diseases.
Yes. Congratulations. This is awesome. I'm so happy for you. I've been following your page for years now. So it's I'm so excited we get to chat about it today. And I'm glad you wrote a book.
It's my pleasure to hang out with you today. It's been a journey and I love sharing it with all sorts of people who come from different backgrounds and different expertise. I mean, the connections that social media has provided me has been endless, and I'm so grateful for the opportunities that I've had. It's been a lot of work, but it's been so rewarding.
Good. No, I'm so glad. Well, speaking of which, your dedication for this book was incredible. It gave me goosebumps. Third page in, I'm already getting goosebumps. What made you make that the dedication, or was that kind of one of the first things that you knew was going in the book?
I made that dedication near the end of writing the book. I went through the process of writing everything, and I said to myself, after I worked through the mast cell activation syndrome section, that was so hard to do. That was the hardest chapter to write, and I even said that in the book. I looked back at some of the patients that I had taken care of at that time, as well as the interview for, I call her a friend now, but she was a follower back then. I interviewed somebody for the main crux of that section. And the theme that I got and what I've experienced is that people feel misunderstood, that they don't feel heard, that they're struggling. And it made me think about all the times I've seen this on social media. I've been tagged in thousands of videos of people struggling. And I even talked about it in the beginning of the book, which is the fact that there's very little access to my specialty, that in the United States, there's about one allergist per close to 50,000 people, which means, especially if you're in a rural area, you may not be able to find one, or you're going to have to drive for hours or fly somewhere. And I was at a conference recently in Vancouver, and I met Canadian allergists. And in Newfoundland, that entire province, they have roughly four allergists for the entire province. So the wait list is like 2 years.
Oh my God.
And so I wanted to make sure that I reached the people who felt like they were never connecting with their doctors. That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah. I was just curious. We have a ear. I'm in Statesville. I'm in North Carolina, which is about an hour north of Charlotte. We have an ear, I haven't even looked this up, eye, ear, nose, and throat doctor 7 miles away. But if I want like a asthma and allergy center, it's 20 miles away, which is coming closer than some people can say. I've never even looked that up.
That's not terrible. But, you know, when I was in St. Louis doing my allergy training at Washington St. Louis, I had a mentor who, amazing doctor, he would spend 1 weekend a month going to a rural area in Arizona and be the only clinic for about a 150, 200 mile radius.
Wow.
And so he would see basically everybody in those small towns 1 weekend a month. So he would see like 50 people over the weekend and do his own charting, his own billing and do everything. And everybody loved him for that because nobody took the time to spend those communities. And that really struck me, those experiences in St. Louis, because we would get patients who would fly from Arkansas.
Wow.
Or They would drive 3, 4, 5 hours. And now through the work I've done through social media, I've had patients, you know, I'm in the Chicagoland area. I've had patients drive from Missouri, from Indiana, from Michigan, from Wisconsin, from UP, Michigan, Upper Peninsula. You know, it's incredible the lengths people have to go to seek a specialist. And so again, this dedication is for those folks who are struggling to find answers. And I may not be able to provide all the answers in the book, but I hope that it will give clarity to what we know and what we don't know, and how there's a lot of unknowns, and how do we navigate these different spaces.
Yeah, and we thank you for it. And I definitely want to talk about your social media presence here in a second, but I did want to back up when it came to writing this book. I was pretty surprised at, I don't mean this to sound like a jab, but I was surprised at what we don't know. There was a couple times you would say, we don't really know this just yet. And I was like, how do we not know this? So, and also, I was, you know, surprised that you were talking about what isn't even taught in medical school. Were you at all nervous of, you know, somebody who's really big, obviously you have this whole platform talking about science and the medical space. Were you at all nervous of like potentially talking about what's lacking in medical schools? Or do you feel like that conversation's necessary?
I was not nervous about it at all. And it's interesting that you ask it that way. And I don't think that was a jab one bit.
Okay.
No, I appreciate that and how kind you were in asking it that way, because I can understand from your perspective how, you know, that might in a way upset me, I guess, but it doesn't at all, because we are in an era where trust in healthcare amongst doctors specifically is at an all-time low. And there are so many different reasons for that, for which a lot of it's not actually doctors' faults. We are the product of the system that we are all living in this society, right? We don't have universal healthcare. We don't have universal childcare. Paid family leave. Many people have to work multiple jobs. Many people are underinsured or don't have insurance. And we have had a political system where a safety net in the Affordable Care Act has been dismantled over time. And it's gotten to the point where Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurers have been decreasing the reimbursement rates, especially amongst primary care physicians or mainly outpatient-based physicians like myself, where you have to see a lot more patients in limited amount of time. Especially because private equity firms and corporations own a lot of physician practices. My dad's a general pediatrician. He operated in an era where most primary care physicians were in private practices, and now they've been bought up or they burnt out and left, and it's these big corporations, and they'll say, all right, you got 10 minutes to do everything. Mm. How can you be able to give good care when you got 10 minutes? And I'm in a small private practice. I'm still lucky. I can spend more time with my patients. I'm really, really lucky I can do that. But most people can't, and most patients don't get the experience that they deserve, which is often why they go and seek alternative practitioners, because they'll get more time with them. They may end up paying more in some ways, but they get the time. And I wanted to shed light on ways that people may not realize how medicine has a lot that we have done and know, and there's a lot more we don't know. And a lot more we're looking into. And that's why the end of the book is all about the future directions, to show, hey, we're actually doing a lot. It just takes time. And even, this is amazing, when I wrote the book, I'll give you one example. There was a medication I talked about called depemokimab. It is a very long-acting antibody to treat severe asthma, where you take an injection once every 6 months, which is incredible. And just before the book launched, the medication got FDA approved. So this is to show how fast science and medicine can go. And then there's other examples where, I thought this was going to get approved by the time the book was published, and nope, it's been delayed or something else happened. And so it really, I think the humility of saying we don't know something or we have a lot to learn, I think that will actually help build back trust and to show that we are all fallible, we're all human. And the whole idea of doctors having God complexes and being very paternalistic of saying, hey, you're going to do this and this and this, and you're going to be fine. And patients would be like, okay, yes, sir. And they look at the diplomas on the wall and compare where do they go to school. None of that means anything anymore. What really matters is the relationships you build with people and the ability to be as transparent as possible about the whole process, which is why I spent a lot of time in the book discussing the pearls and pitfalls of testing, mm-hmm. that not everybody needs an allergy test. It is so important for people to recognize that even if you don't have allergies, it's a good book to read because it teaches you about how to navigate healthcare and that you don't need every single test necessarily to figure out what is going on. It could actually be harmful, not necessarily helpful.
Right. And I was watching your video today about, I think you said they're going into phase two for like an oral drug for food allergies. I mean, mm-hmm. it's, and you talk about vaccines in the book and how we're making so much progress, but I was still so surprised at times where you'd be like, man, we're still learning about eczema. And I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah, because the issue with modern medicine is if you really understand the molecular pathways and how a disease functions, we call it pathophysiology. In the wellness world, they call it root cause. And they'll say doctors don't look at root causes, and that's a bunch of baloney. We do, but we look at it at a much deeper, more comprehensive level so that when I discussed it in the book, and I can tell you now, there are so many different factors that go into eczema and what that disease is. And people are like, well, it's just dry, itchy skin. No, it's much more than that. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more than that. You know, as an example, a lot of people with eczema, they have a bacteria called Staph aureus on their skin that we now know from recent studies is releasing a type of protein that breaks down other proteins that then activates neurons to encourage you to scratch your skin. Most likely because when you scratch your skin, you seed the bacteria to other parts so it can proliferate. It's a survival mechanism. It's actually, you know, pretty interesting. You know, we're nerding out over this kind of stuff. But when you understand all those different moving parts, you can then devise a solution, right? And that's how modern medicine works. But we also have to remember and humble ourselves in that we can only do so much to make health better. I could give all the recommendations in the world, but if we live in a society where EPA is deregulating Clean Air Act and making our air harder to breathe because there's more pollution and smoke and yada yada, it's a losing battle. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. Like the effects of my recommendations are diminished in a setting like what we have right now. So there's so much we could do better as a society that goes past the clinic.
Yeah. I was watching videos before we hopped on, and Neil deGrasse Tyson was on a podcast. And of course, I can't remember what it was now, but they asked, what are you most scared of? Editing patches here. I wanted to go find this clip and I shared it on my story, which is probably gone by now. But there's a great clip of Neil deGrasse Tyson talking with Hasan Minhaj on his podcast. Hasan Minhaj doesn't know. So that's what I was referencing. I could not remember at the time. Please go listen to it. It's great. Okay, now back to the show. And he said his biggest fear right now is science illiteracy. Mm-hmm. We've already been talking about it a little bit too, but did you want to elaborate any more on the science, especially with your background on social media and like all the misinformation out there and why the work you're doing and the book you're writing is so important? How bad is the science literacy right now?
It feels like it's at an all-time low, you know, where you see the type of information that is proliferated online and it's people who don't have the proper credentials or expertise saying things very confidently and are platformed by politicians at this point, mm-hmm. that it would be unheard of a couple years ago to have a vaccine trial lawyer give a 2-hour testimony at a CDC advisory committee on immunization practices. They have no business putting a person like that up there. And the problem is that it's a federal public health agency. So people are going to listen to that because you do want to have trust in your public health institutions from your government. But they've been able to warp these things. And we worry about how our children are lagging behind in reading comprehension and critical thinking and STEM, all these different things. You know, there's a lot we can point to as to why that's happening. I mean, the pandemic didn't help. There's a lot of learning lost because we had to go virtual to save lives, and we still, you know, didn't do the best job at that. This is such a hard challenge to deal with. And I see study after study showing how most people get their health information online, whether we like it or not. Mm-hmm. It's at our fingertips. And with AI, too, this is going to be even more of a problem. Because AI is really good at collating information, but it doesn't get at the nuance necessarily that a human can do when it comes to somebody's health. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely utility for it, but I think we need to really take a step back and try to find ways to improve this dissemination of information. When I was in college, one of the first courses I took was understanding writing in different media. And so we had to learn how to write an email properly, professionally, and understanding text messaging and graffiti. It was a really interesting class. But I got all of these experiences much earlier on in my life where I'm a millennial. So like adapting to technology is part of our generation, where we lived in an analog world as kids and then grew up adapting mm-hmm. technology along the way. Versus children now, they have technology thrown at their face immediately. Kids are on iPads, right? They're not touching physical books nearly as much as they did when we were younger, you know? So this is a challenge.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not in college now. I was raised around a good time. Things were simple.
It was a lot simpler.
It was a lot, yeah. So a couple of things when it comes to misinformation that I learned so much in this book. Every page, I mean, my poor fiance was just getting flooded with information. Here's a few of them. I found out, and I know that this is not, you didn't give me doctor advice in this book. I'm not actually allergic to medicine.
Oh, yeah?
And now I feel like I have to do damage control because I've been telling people I'm allergic to amoxicillin. And then, of course, I broke out into hives from amoxicillin one time on my legs. But that's not allergies. That's just a reaction, which is common for amoxicillin. And now I fear that I'm not getting proper treatment if I say that. So,
well, you know, this is why when you have these stories that you think about, you take that information, you go to a doctor and give them more information. Like, obviously, I cannot diagnose you right. or tell you should take it or not. But it helps, and you know, raise questions that need answering. And sometimes people think, oh, it's okay, I have a penicillin allergy. There's other medications available, but they don't know the potential risk of having that. And if you have an unnecessary label, what that entails. And that's what we talk about in the book.
Yeah. And the honey thing. So I grew up, my parents were the type of people that if I was sick, it was always medicine. It was vaccines, medicine, everything like that. And then I, you know, growing up in the South, you meet some people who are like, no, just, you know, eat some honey. Eat some local honey. You'll acclimate. And when I told my fiance I was reading this book, he's like, let me know what he says about that honey because he swears by it. And I was like, get a load of this. It's bullshit. And then, of course, the food allergy stuff is fascinating to me because I'm very fortunate to not have any type of sensitivity. And I liked learning that there's a difference between food allergy, food sensitivity, food intolerance. And I'm very fortunate. I don't have any problems. I tell people my allergy is I eat everything, which is, you know, is rough. So that was great to learn that. And then the pets. Okay, I love this. On page 65, you said almost 10 million Americans are allergic to their pets. Not just pets. I love it. Their pets. The pets that they currently own. But the hypoallergenic pets are a myth. Can you deep dive into that a little bit more? Because I swear people have said that their pets are hypoallergenic. They should be good to be around them. But is that not true?
It's a big myth. It's really pet industry language that's coded to try to buy more pets. Because so many people have allergies and they'll say, well, these ones have less allergens. You can't buy a breed, say, and I have 3 German Shepherds, by the way.
Love.
Okay. And they're the loves of my life. I love these dogs. But each one of them makes different amounts of allergens. It's the individual dog makes different amounts because it doesn't matter if they shed or not. It's in their saliva, their skin cells, we call it dander, and urine. So all dogs pee, all dogs lick you, and they all have skin cells that shed. And they actually had studies where they compared dogs labeled as hypoallergenic versus they weren't, and they tested how much allergen was present in each of these different homes and found that they were either the same or sometimes the ones labeled hypoallergenic had more allergens. So it's a total misconception that if I wanted to, you know, my wife's a PhD immunologist. We always talk about this every so often. I'm like, hey, can we like devise an at-home test to measure how much allergens that could be coming from a pet? Because if we could have a point of care test like that, I think we could retire early.
Yeah, it'd be great.
It would be great, but that's pie in the sky. I mean, because there's so many other factors outside of just measuring the allergen that makes a difference too. So for it to be clinically meaningful, that you have to take care of all these other factors. That's also why, as I talk about in the book, there's only so much testing can tell us when it comes to allergies. But your body is not just like in a vacuum in a steady state all the time. Illness, exercise, elevated body temperatures, taking medications, alcohol, all these things change your immune response. And a test will never be able to fully encapsulate that.
Right. That'd be great, though. That would help out a lot of people. When it comes to your job, tell me what it was like pre-COVID and now what your job has been like post-COVID.
So for full disclosure, for those who don't know me, I did my medical training at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. I was there for undergrad med school 8 years. I then went and did my pediatrics training at University of Illinois in Chicago and then allergy fellowship in Washington, St. Louis. I was doing all my training, working my butt off, learning about the human body and the ways it works, it doesn't, taking care of patients, and always under supervision doing that when you're doing your training. The pandemic started as I was finishing my training. So I had to get thrust into this very difficult position where I moved from St. Louis to the Chicagoland area. Everything's on lockdown. And as a specialist, that is like the mark of death, because you have to be able to connect with people to get referrals, to have patients come to you. That, you know, this is, we're talking 2020 and nobody knows who I am. It's very different now, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that was such a difficult, challenging time because I couldn't go into an internist or a pediatrician's office, because I take care of all ages, and say, hey, I'm Dr. Rubin. Here's some cookies. Let's talk, you know? I couldn't do that. Nobody was taking anybody. They were all just trying to survive. I mean, it was chaos. Like, mm-hmm. It was so difficult. And normally hospitals put on social events. They were all canceled, everything. There was nothing going on. So what did I do? I, like a lot of people, went to Twitter. There was the med Twitter culture where people were just talking about COVID and healthcare and all that. And I went to Facebook and went to the food allergy mom groups and tried to connect with all these different people. And I realized within a couple of months of doing this, I was like, oh my God, there is so much bad information on the internet. I didn't realize it because I only casually use social media. Now I'm like everywhere. It's kind of fun to think about back then. But I literally was just amazed at how bad it was and how much discourse was highly polarized. The same thing true with like food allergies. Like you would find people who have all of these ideas that were not based in the evidence, and a lot of fear mongering and a lot of problems that I noticed on every side of the coin, if you will. So I spent a lot of time educating people, and it came to spring of 2021. We had a period where the vaccines came, and as an allergist, and I talk about this in the book, I started seeing vaccine reactions, and just being that expert, that go-to in my community where people would come, I would evaluate them. We had a few actual cases of severe allergic reactions. I interact with a lot of other people to try to figure out what was going on, and we were able to take care of it and figure out all that mess. But the spring of 2021 was when a medical student from Canada said, hey, Dr. Rubin, I think you do good on TikTok. You should join it. And I laughed at her. I was like, why? It's a kids dancing app. Why would I do something like that? And she said, no. I think you'd be really good at this. So like, okay. So I first started out, I was horrible. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. Like, for those who don't know, like we were talking earlier, like we lived in an analog age. I did do a little bit of like acting and home movie making and even like edited VHS tapes did some of that. You know what I'm talking about. It was a slow, laborious process. But I had those skills. Like I had the skills of like being in front of a camera, of editing and adapting to technology. So I just went full head of steam, just trying this out. And it slowly but surely gained an audience. And it kept going and going and going. As I'm seeing patients and slowly building my practice up, the success started coming as my face started to go all over the place. You know, bow tie doctor who hula hoops. And so I've just noticed even a shift in my patients, because I would talk about the pandemic and the current events of what's going on. And it's made my experience with my patients and my community so much more enriching because everybody knows who I am before they meet me, before I know who they are. And so we establish that rapport immediately. So I feel like I have better access to my patients because they're more willing to open up to me about whatever is going on. And so I feel like I'm much more successful at what I do because I've built that trust digitally before my patients even come in. It's one of the most exciting, rewarding feelings to have as a doctor is trust. The trust that patients have in you is worth more than any amount of money in the world. It really is. It doesn't matter. I don't care, you know, if I could live in a mansion or whatever it is. Like, that doesn't compare to the fact that you can go into a room, not know that person, and they're immediately saying, hey, I need help, and I believe you. Mm-hmm. And if I tell them I don't know something, they'll take me at my word the vast majority of the time. And that is so comforting that I can admit when I'm not sure and I don't know something, because doctors are trained. You know, you are to get into medical school, you have to work so hard to be perfect at everything. You are constantly made to be perfect. And if you make mistakes, you're feared of being sued. We do know from studies that if you are somebody who's open and honest and present, you are much less likely to have those problems because people are kind, generally speaking. And if something happens and you're very transparent and open about it, and I've had, you know, I've made mistakes. I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. But you can get through the day a lot better when you have that trust. It is invaluable.
I have found doctors from TikTok. Like, I have sought them out, found doctors. Because you're right. And it's not really something, I guess, I haven't thought of it that way, where if I see somebody who's charismatic, making, able to, you know, make some videos, talk about current events, like, do these, that would be, make me much more comfortable to, like, be able to talk to them about my problems. So that's, yeah, that's a great way to put it.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The ProNuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at ProNuvo.com. That's ProNuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with ProNuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit ProNuvo.com. That's ProNuvo.com.
If you need something quick and convenient like my family does, my ultimate high-protein dinner hack is grabbing pre-marinated steak tips and making them extra crispy and charred in the air fryer while the inside stays juicy and medium rare. I can't say enough about the convenience of Omaha Steaks. Thanks to them, I always have the highest quality proteins on hand. Enjoy exceptional flavor in the convenience of Omaha Steaks during their Spring Savings event. Omaha Steaks is your weeknight win. And right now, you can get the world's best everyday protein during their Spring Savings event. Go to omahasteaks.com for an extra $35 off when you use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to shop their Spring Savings event and use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
On the topic of COVID, you know, vaccines are were a huge topic in this book and just a huge topic right now. And there's a lot of vaccine hesitancy. We just read a book for the book club about rabies, which you also mentioned, the rabies vaccine, which was a nice little crossover there. And you do go on to talk about how that, yes, there are some allergic reactions to these. However, they are few and far between. And if there's people out there listening who might share some of this hesitancy, what advice would you give them besides read your book?
Besides reading my book, you know, I would have an open and honest conversation with your doctor about your concerns and make sure, and this is for any physician or healthcare worker out there too. Whenever I talk about vaccines with my patients, I always say, what have you heard? Tell me what you're concerned about. Where are you hearing this information from? And then I let them talk and I don't interrupt. I wait. I listen. I want them to be heard and acknowledge that oftentimes a lot of the fears that people have are because they've been told something by somebody who they trusted that it's not true. And there are situations where there's a correlation versus causation type mm-hmm. thing where they notice that I did this and this happened and they may not be related, right? And so I need them to tell me everything before I can then tease out and figure out, okay, what is the actual issue here? And the vast majority of the time, either it's an expected reaction that mm-hmm. a lot of vaccines do, or it's not related at all. That's the majority of the times. And then there's that very rare instance where, yeah, it did actually happen because of that reason, because of that immunization. It can happen. But I've only seen a handful of real severe allergic reactions, because it's about a 1 in a million chance, as high as 1 in 100,000 to 1 in a million, right? Very rare. Most physicians don't see this stuff. So this is where it really takes time to unpack these things. And in modern medicine with the healthcare system, a lot of times we don't have that opportunity. But wellness influencers have all the time in the world that they can go online and say these things over and over and over again. I've noticed this interesting thing, because even though I don't post on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, I don't post anymore. I check there for my sources of misinformation. Mm-hmm. And I find that on my feed, the same videos pop up over and over again, and then they rehash old videos saying the same thing over and over and over again. So I can't even imagine what it's like for other people who are struggling with these issues, that, you know, you have an incident where it may have been related to a vaccine, and then all of a sudden your social media feed is flooded with this stuff that is confirming what you think to be true. That's feeding into something we call confirmation bias. Mm. And it's very, very powerful, especially if it's driven by anecdotes, that when you hear stories that sound similar to yours, it validates your concerns, when in reality it may have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think COVID just really tipped it over the edge, unfortunately.
I agree.
I looked this up, taking a different route here. Make sure I don't catch my book on fire. That'd really do a number on it. In North Carolina, a two-pack, I just looked this up for my state because I was curious, a two-pack of brand-named EpiPens generally costs between $650 and $750 without insurance. However, there is generic epinephrine auto-injectors, which are significantly cheaper at $150 to $400 for a two-pack. Dr. Rubin, why are EpiPens so fucking expensive?
They shouldn't be.
They shouldn't be.
You know, but the economics behind it don't make any sense, to be honest. I will say that part of what caused this is the fact that the makers of EpiPen, they essentially had a monopoly for a while, because one of its main competitors had a major recall because of device failures. And so they were off the market for a while. And right after that happened, things just really went out of control. But it really, it's a monopoly issue, where there's these problems with, okay, do we have a true authorized generic? So when you're talking about that particular device, it's not like a real generic in the sense that we think of, like Tylenol and acetaminophen that you get over the counter as a pain reliever.
Right.
Because a generic, when it comes to epinephrine, the actual substance, yes, but it's the delivery device that is fought after from a legal sense, because it's not like Adrenaclick, like what you're mentioning, and EpiPen, they're not the same delivery device. They're supposed to do the same thing, mm-hmm. but that actual tech is not the same. So even the generic is outrageously expensive in that sense. It makes no lick of a sense. You know, in other states, like here in Illinois, in Colorado, there's other ones that are trying to cap the costs of epinephrine. And Congressman Maxwell Frost had introduced a bill that was supposed to cap EpiPens nationwide. But, you know, how Congress has been going lately, like anything's going to get done. It's really going to come down, unfortunately, it's going to come down to a bipartisan effort when, like, two legislators from both sides of the aisle have kids with food allergies and there's a big problem. It's never, yep. It's that's where you'll finally see some traction with that. you know, I would have thought, to be honest, that RFK Jr. would have done something about this because he has a kid with severe food allergies. I would have thought that maybe that would have been more of a priority, but they haven't moved the needle on that, pun intended. He has talked about food allergies in some sense, where he had the FDA have a panel of people. I actually personally know who did a pretty good job, but there's a lot of issues we can get into, but I don't want to derail it too much.
No, we can. We can, because we share similar frustrations. I don't know. I don't know how you do what you do without crashing out as often as I probably would, and seeing the what people are saying and being as knowledgeable as you are of the topics. I mean, I feel like I'd lose it.
Well, I'll tell you something about that, because my career trajectory changed dramatically from one experience I had in a pediatric ICU as a medical student, because I was going to go into I was just going to do general pediatrics originally, like my dad. But then it was like 2 a.m. I was in the pediatric ICU, and there was a star football player who had a very severe type of seizure called status epilepticus, where he could not stop seizing. And they had to put some heavy duty drugs on this kid to get him to stop. And he was basically just under anesthesia. It was horrible. And that night, I had been helping out with his care for a few days at that point. That night, his potassium rose out of the blue, like rapidly. And he ended up having a fatal tachyarrhythmia, a fatal heart rhythm, and his heart stopped. And I was part of a group of 4 people who were constantly doing CPR on this kid to keep him theoretically alive until his family was able to drive in to come see him. And that experience just broke me. And I was like, I don't want to ever work in a hospital, because that was such a traumatic experience for me. Because I'm actually a very... I'm very introspective, but I'm also very emotional, and I take my patients home with me, you know, as a figure of speech. I think about the decisions I make on a regular basis, if I did the right thing or didn't, and do I need to do something differently next time? I reflect on that pretty much every night. And I knew I wanted to do something where I could help people stay healthy as much as possible. And as I was rotating in fields, I found allergy to be so fascinating and exciting to me, and being able to take care of people in the clinic and hopefully keep them out of the hospital as much as possible was a big mission of mine. And I had some other stories kind of similar to that, but it's not always easy to do this. Honestly, I don't always sleep that well. I work very hard. I enjoy working hard, but at some point I got to figure out, when am I going to kind of hang my hat, so to speak, and take a real break. I don't know, because I just see so much going on in the world, and at the point I'm at with my career, and when people say, you know, I trust you, and I need your voice, we need your voice, it keeps motivating me internally, even when I'm like, I don't want to get out of bed or whatever it is. Like, we all have those feelings. That's always driving me to continue to do what I'm doing.
Yeah. On a different topic, climate change. Very timely topic. You talk in this book about how climate change is affecting allergies due to longer seasons, warmer seasons, and whatnot. Besides the obvious, and again, we're not going to get, I don't think, too far with this administration, but, you know, I don't even know what my question is here. How can we adjust? What can we do? What are things that we can do better about, you know, making sure that people are aware that these things are happening, and that, you know, our pollen's just going to get worse? I mean, that's the most loaded question ever. But,
well, I'm going to actually ask you a question to answer as part of my thing here. Would you want to read a book that really focuses on climate health?
Oh, of course. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Because that's something I'm as we're talking about this, is actually something that's spinning in my wheels as I think creatively about things, is like a book about really focusing in on, you know, it's not climate change, because it's been so politicized. That's not what I'm trying to get at here. And this is part of, I think, is the part of the solution, is that we need to be educated on how our environment affects our health. That and so, you know, having the ability to communicate that to people, to the general public, about why our world matters to our health, I think that'll help reframe this discussion rather than just saying, well, there's climate change and we got to put in this Clean Air Act and we got to do this for EVs and da, 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 that it's all the whole thing about money and politics.
Right.
The reality is, who gives a crap if people are so sick they can't work, right? Our environment impacts us in so many ways that people may not realize. If you live in a city, especially if it's highly polluted, as a woman, you are more likely to give preterm birth than if you are in an area where there's less pollution. Okay, that's an example. We had those wildfire smokes I wrote about in the book that caused a spike in ER visits related to asthma. People died from that wildfire smoke just inhaling it. And that happened in Chicago, actually. It was very tragic. There are so many examples I could go into about how your immune system can end up causing so many more problems because of what it's exposed to in the environment. And there's also a lot of theories about how chronic disease stems from the environment. You know, so there's so many ways that I could talk about this, but I think part of the way we get this into a better place in the long term is we have to reframe this discussion to talk more about the impacts on our health, because health is wealth.
Please let us know when you write it and you're back on the New York Times bestselling author list. We'll have you back on the podcast. You know, I briefly mentioned earlier a video you posted where you're talking about how there's, you know, potentially they're going into phase two of like a, you know, a food allergy oral pill that we might be able to take. And you, at the end of the book too, you talk about ways that, you know, we're constantly evolving, we're constantly growing. What is like the next big like thing that's on the precipice? What can we probably expect within the next 5 years? Do you think that that's just going to absolutely blow our minds?
Oh, wow. There's, I mean, it also depends obviously on which disease we're talking about, because in that chapter I talk about advancements in pretty much every field, and some of them have like very little and others have a lot more, you know, due to the resources, the funding that and all of that.
What are you most excited about then?
I think the most immediate thing I'm excited about that's going to come very soon is the fact that we're having more and more alternatives to EpiPens, to these auto-injector devices. So a nasal spray containing epinephrine just came out. There's going to be a strip that looks like Listerine, but it's epinephrine you can put under the tongue.
Wow.
That makes such a difference to help decrease anxiety for people, because a lot of people don't like needles. I mean, I don't like needles, and I'm a doctor.
Like
every so often I have a pediatric patient who's like, yeah, I'll take a shot.
That's my fiance. And people think when they see me, they're like, oh, she'll be fine.
Oh.
With all the tattoos? No. I had to get an IV recently. I thought I was going to pass out. Anyway, keep talking.
So the point is that there's a big problem with how a lot of allergic diseases cause anxiety. And if we're finding ways to decrease that anxiety, we can improve people's quality of life. And something that seems so simple, but it's so complicated, as changing the way that we administer a life-saving medication, hopefully will help increase access, but make it more affordable too,
yeah,
right?
That part.
So that's like the closest thing that I would say. But as I mentioned in the book, because we're getting so many advancements in our understanding of how these things work and don't work, we're trying new things that I would have never thought was possible. Like, it's so interesting to me, and I wrote a few sentences about this, how we could take two drugs already FDA approved and put them together to try to fix a problem like food allergies, taking a multiple myeloma cancer drug and an already approved allergy drug, putting them together to knock out a chain of events is so cool to me, you know?
Yeah. The whole about the immune system chat, there were so many times where I just wrote like, man, the human body is so cool, man.
I'm glad you like that, because the only like relatively negative reviews I got in the book was some people were like, it's too academic. And I get that. I really struggled when I was writing to say, okay, is this going to sound too academic or not? Or is this going to be too fluffy or not? I wanted to make sure that I honored my audience's intelligence, that I think a lot of people who are looking into this are very smart people. But if you're going to learn the nuance of allergy, You have to understand the immune system. You have to have a baseline. It's no different than learning skills, and you have to learn a new language to figure out that skill. It's so important. And so anybody who might be initially struggling in the beginning of that book, it's okay. But once you get through it, it will help you really take better charge of the understanding of your health as you go through the remaining parts of the book. It is so crucial to have that baseline of knowledge. Otherwise, we won't be able to help you as much as it could.
Mm-hmm. No, I went to the opposite of medical school, which is film school. So I don't know anything. I actually, this was very approachable. And I like that you did the audiobook as well. That was nice, because I just felt like we were having a conversation. But yeah, that needed to happen at the beginning, though, because I didn't even know, when it comes to allergies, I don't even know where to begin. Like, I don't even know where to think. So when you set it up where you're like, and I'm wondering if you did you take any advice from your dad's, what was it, Dr. Rubin's mini school to like help you with the organization of this book?
You know, we worked on that since I was in high school. So some of the ways of like thinking like a doctor came from those early experiences, absolutely. But the organization of the book, I got inspiration from other physicians who had written books recently. There is someone who is a close friend of mine now and a mentor, Karen Tang, who wrote It's Not Hysteria. It's a great book. I loved her approach to explaining things as well, and so I had inspiration. And I wrote about her at the end of the book because she is such a cool person and kind and funny and I just think an all around great human being. So, you know, shout out to my friend, and if you're looking for another book like on women's health, It's Not Hysteria is a great book.
Yeah, I got to meet her at the Bookmarks Festival in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. She did a panel about it, and I got to have a, you know, full on conversation with her about, you know, how she really helped with a lot of my, you know, just especially when it comes to being nervous about going to doctors. Being a woman, it's really scary sometimes with some of the concerns. I mean, it's taken me 6 or 7 doctors to find like a good one. So, you know, I'm working through her book, you know, actually now, and I was just gushing when I met her, because I was like, your videos helped me. Again, the videos being online helped me so much to just ease some of my concerns. You answered some of my questions. Like, this was just great. So I love that y'all know each other. That's super cool. So it's the first day of spring. How can people, besides step one, buying All About Allergies, step two, how can people just prepare for the pollen, the onslaught of pollen that is coming, if they have any seasonal allergies?
Well, hopefully they were already starting their medication a couple weeks ago, because it works more effectively if you start it earlier rather than playing catch up. Because once you start experiencing symptoms, you start getting more of an immune response that is harder to turn off. Mm. So that's the first. The second is, you know, if you got air filters in your home, you got to make sure they're all up to date, that they're all changed. Keep your windows and doors closed as much as possible. Have a plan in place so that everybody keeps their shoes in one part of the house and everybody changes their clothes when they get home. Because you have pollen grains that will go all over your body and on your clothes, and you want to get rid of that as much as possible before you go on to your upholstered furniture or bedding and you deposit it all over the place. And then at nighttime, showers or baths, and then rinsing your nose with neti pot, saline rinse bottle, something like that, that's distilled water to just flush everything out. And if you're doing any yard work, wear a mask, surgical mask or better, and eye protection to filter out as much of the pollen and particulates as possible.
Yeah, no tap water in those neti pots.
No, because that could give you a brain-eating amoeba.
Oh my God.
It's rare, but it can happen. It's like universally fatal if you do. So we don't like to take that kind of risk. Yeah.
Wait, I've done it with tap water before. Oh no.
You're fine, obviously.
I'm alive. No, I did read that in the book. That was one of the facts where I told Chris, I was like, crap.
Rare, but it's one of those things as a physician, I can't tell people, oh yeah, it's fine to do tap water. Can't do that. Right? Because if you're that one in, you know, 10 million chance, it's bad.
Way to end it on a morbid note.
No. It was really nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this very special bonus episode with Dr. Zachary Rubin on his book, All About Allergies. Everything you need to know about food allergies, asthma, hay fever, and more. Go pick up a copy if you guys haven't already. Seriously, I learned so much. I know I said that so many times, but it's so true. If you guys would like to join the Morbidly Curious Book Club, see what we're reading this year, listen to other episodes of the podcast, subscribe to our BookBox subscription service, buy some merch, and more, it's all available on our website, morbidlycuriousbookclub.com. Stay safe out there. Stay curious. Oh, gosh. And go stay on top of your allergies, friends.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.